Kempire is brought to you by
Philadelphia, the Kempire After Dark, the villain era, is coming to your city on July 10th. That is 2 weeks away. But this week only, until Sunday, there is a flash sale for premium tickets for $25 only. Don't miss our night of hot topics. We have a lot to talk about, from Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Miami, to The Diddler, and so much more. Don't forget, we are also coming to the City Winery in Atlanta on August 5th, and then we're in Union Stage on August 22nd in Washington, D.C. Then we're back in New York City at the Green Room 42. That show has not just the meet and greet, but we also have a live stream option. So even if you're attending these other shows or you're not in any of the cities, you have an option to be a part of the Kempire After Dark, the villain era live experience right now. Get your tickets today. More information is available in the description. But again, Philly, go get your tickets this week. Flash sale happening right now.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
So did they or did they not, the prosecution from the Southern District of New York, drop the charges against Diddy? No. But we're going to get into some of what's playing out in court and the motion that the prosecution sent to the court. We're going to unpack a lot of that in day 30 of our exclusive coverage here on the Kempire Channel of the Diddy trial. So this morning, there have been so many different people reporting that charges against Diddy, multiple charges, not all the charges, had been dropped against Diddy. And I'm glad I didn't run with that narrative and I did a little more digging, did a little bit more texting. You know, Kirsten Brown, who is a Los Angeles prosecutor, has collaborated with me here on the channel in two parts in regards to what we are watching play out. And she already told us what this process would look like in part two. She explained to us what the next steps would look like when it comes to this trial. So today in day 30, and one thing I'm not going to do is explain what has been playing out in day 30, just because it's so complicated. It's probably above, definitely my pay grade and above any of our pay grades when it comes to what is playing out, because now they are trying to figure out the jury instructions. Because as we've said in our collaborations with Kirsten, this will make or break this trial for either side. This is what they're battling in court as we speak. They were supposed to start today at 12 noon. They ended up starting much later. They had set for 2 p.m. Then they didn't, I don't think they really started until like 3 p.m. Both sides are arguing what they want included when it comes to the jury instructions, because those jury instructions will make it more hard for the prosecution or less hard for the prosecution or more hard for the defense in regards to how the jury is able to determine he is guilty on these particular charges. So the fake news, I'm going to say fake news because a lot of people were irresponsible in regards to their news reports. And that goes across the board. I've seen major outlets and I've seen not so major outlets report this. So this goes back to what I was saying just a few days ago. You have to be mindful of where you're getting your information. And everyone is not going to get it right. Because I have to tell you, when I first saw it, I was like, they dropped the charges. So I had to do a little bit of digging and reaching out just to figure out, wait, did they drop charges? No, that's not exactly what happened. So we're going to go through the actual motion that the prosecution sent to the court in regards to this. They are literally, as we speak, as at the time of this recording, are in court trying to figure out. This is the charging conference that we mentioned. The jurors are not in court today. They should return to court tomorrow. It will be interesting to see where we are in regards to schedule. It doesn't look like the closing arguments will be happening definitely not today. I think they're aiming for tomorrow, but we shall see. It really depends on how today ends. But they're in court. They're in court. So this is technically still day 30. However, our recap of day 30 will be a little bit different because it really won't be a recap of what's going in court. Because, and I'm going to tell you this, because I know my lane, and that's important for us that are talking about this. If you don't know your lane in regards to the information, like if you don't know something, it's okay to say, I don't know. Based on what I've seen, shout out to our friends over at Inner City Press. They're in the court. They're documenting the back and forth between the judge, the prosecution, and the defense. I'm reading through it, and I'm just like, yeah, this is going to be, first of all, above my understanding, above everyone that's watching this, that's not attorneys, that are not in the room. Because that's the other thing, too. We are not getting an official transcript from Inner City Press. They are giving us a paraphrasing of what's happening. And here, we need a transcript. We need to know what is being said exactly. And what they're battling are constitutional laws. That is above our understanding. And I know my lane. I think we all should know our lane. But what I will say in this video is that the rumor that charges against Diddy have been dropped are not true. And I will probably have a better explanation of this a little bit later on, because even attorneys are saying, well, no, this is what they mean by this. And some of what the prosecution wants removed in regards to the jury instructions might be because the defense has said some of the things that have played out in court over these last few weeks could be considered unconstitutional. That might be their motivation. At the end of the day, we've already told you this, the defense only needs one juror on their side. The prosecution wants, they need, not just wants, need all of the jurors on their side. They need all of the jurors for a unanimous decision to get guilty in regards to these charges. So what's playing out in day 30 in the court is figuring out those jury instructions. Again, I've said this yesterday, I'm going to say this again. This is why I keep citing my interview, two-part interview that I did with Kirsten that are very long. However, it's a great reference. I feel like I understand better what's playing out in these last couple of weeks because of my conversation with Kirsten. Matter of fact, I need to go back and listen to some of what she said, but we've been in conversation. I'm hoping if we can get a transcript or at least a summary of what's happening in court today and then bring Kirsten back here. Kirsten is a full-fledged prosecutor. She has her own cases going on right now. However, if she has some time, Kirsten, I know you're going to watch this. I'm going to try and bring her back here so that we can have a better understanding what they are arguing. And you guys will let me know if you want to hear that. Because again, a lot of this is above our understanding. Unless you are an attorney, and even then, not all attorneys are going to agree on what's playing out here. But what we can say is that charges have not been dropped by the court in regards to the Diddy of it all. Because I now know people are now saying, oh, see, they're dropping charges. They have not proven their case. No, guys, that's not what is playing out. But, you know, we've been citing our sources. That's what we do. That's what we do here on the channel. We always cite our sources. So I do want to play for you some audio from our friends over at Law and Crime. We're going to be utilizing this stopping and going under the copyright law of fair use. And as always, I'll put the actual video in the description of this video so that you guys can actually go give them a like, a comment, and a follow if you haven't already. They've been covering this case since the beginning as well. We've cited them before here on the channel. We're citing them again. But they also were a little confused by some of what was playing out in court earlier this morning. Let's take a listen to what they had to say.
With the attorneys and the judge to go over jury instructions in this case. So important in a complicated racketeering conspiracy, sex trafficking, transportation to engage in prostitution case, the law matters. The elements matter. This is going to be the roadmap that the jury is going to use in their deliberations. This is the law that will guide.
And they have to use this roadmap. They can't go off and make things up for themselves. They have to use this roadmap. I said to you yesterday that I did a focus group years ago. It wasn't the same type of case, but they did a focus group jury. So we had to pretend like we were a jury. Those instructions were so particular. I told you it was not even a pleasant. It was probably the worst focus group I ever did. I was like, never again. I don't remember how much they paid for it, but I know that it was all day. And I remember filling out receiving the instructions for the jury. And I was like, and you have to pay attention. Again, another reminder as to why it was important to get rid of juror number 6. The judge said, you're not even able to answer simple questions. I'm concerned that you will not be able to handle the specificity of jury instructions. So I now understand where the judge was coming from. Like, if you can't answer basic questions, you're not going to be able to answer when I need you to when it comes to these jury instructions that they're battling in regards to today on day 30 of the Diddy trial.
And it's a complicated case. So how both sides tweak the language, what they cut out, what they're telling the jury to, what they're telling the jury they need to find in order.
So this is also normal, guys, in regards to, because again, a lot of us, this is the first time covering a case like this or following a case like this. So it's not abnormal for the prosecution to be taking things out.
Find Sean Combs guilty is so important. Now, closing arguments will happen tomorrow. We think it's actually going to extend into Friday. This jury might not even be handed the case until Monday. And by the way, it might take them some time to actually go through the jury instructions. Now, if you want to talk about one word that defines this morning so far in this case, confusion. There is confusion. Why? So first of all, I've seen a lot of chatter about this. We're going to be taking your questions about this whole case, including this issue as well. So this is our lunchtime show. If you have any questions for the next hour, submit them. We'll answer them. But what happened? The court submitted a letter last night, and I'm going to read you a portion of this letter. Now, in the racketeering, by the way, racketeering conspiracy, the prosecution is not only alleging that Sean Combs operated a criminal enterprise, that there was a criminal agreement between him and others to facilitate crimes and cover them up, and, you know.
That's the element that a lot of people are not convinced. Even other attorneys, as we mentioned before, I know a lot of you had reactions to Sunny Hostin because a lot of you didn't know. She admitted that she knows Diddy. I don't know. Knowing someone versus being friends with them are two different things. I don't know if she was that friendly with him. She does live out in the Hamptons. She does have a home out in the Hamptons. I'm sure she's probably been to a Diddy party. Again, she's not the only attorney that's not 100% convinced that the prosecution has proven their case.
Portion of the charge, but that they have to prove at least two underlying crimes. There is there is forced labor, there's kidnapping, there's arson, there's bribery, there's sex trafficking, there's drug offenses. Well, what happened? The government submitted a letter and it says this. In an effort, by the way, to streamline the jury instructions, make them more easily digestible, they say specifically, the government has removed instructions from the charge relating to attempted kidnapping under both California and New York law, attempted arson under California law, and aiding and abetting sex trafficking. Now,
that is what a lot of people said today. Oh, they're dropping charges. No, they're not.
There's been a lot of chatter today and a lot of reporting that, oh my gosh, the prosecutors are completely throwing out kidnapping and arson, which were big factors in this case. A lot of evidence came forward about that with Capricorn Clark, Kid Cudi. I don't think that's accurate. Why? I'm going back to the latest indictment in this case. And under the racketeering charge, when they talk about all of the predicate crimes, they talk about this. I'm going to read it verbatim. Multiple acts involving kidnapping, and then it says it's chargeable under the following provisions of state law. California law, kidnapping. California law, attempted kidnapping. California law, aiding and abetting kidnapping. California law, conspiracy with kidnapping. There's New York law, kidnapping. New York law, attempted kidnapping, aiding and abetting, and so forth. My take is, yeah, they might be getting rid of the aiding and abetting with respect to California law and New York law. They might be getting rid of attempted arson under California law, aiding and abetting of sex trafficking. But you still have the kidnapping. You still have conspiracy of kidnapping. You still have aiding and abetting with kidnapping. So, and the same thing goes with arson. So I don't think they're throwing out all of these charges. But I want to talk about it. I want to bring on right now Long Crimes in court reporter Elizabeth Milner, who's going to be in court later today when hopefully they clarify this a little bit up. Elizabeth, you and I were talking about this. If you have any guidance about what you think is going on here, but also to provide more context, doesn't it seem unlikely that the prosecutors would abandon outright all of arson and all of kidnapping, considering what was presented to this jury?
Yeah, it seems like a really kind of surprising announcement that they made in this particular letter, especially given the amount of evidence that we heard, especially when it was coming to, or when it had to relate to Capricorn Clark, or even instances of Cassie being locked in these hotel rooms, or when it comes to going back to Capricorn Clark, the whole lie detector aspect, and her having to go inside that, abandoned building, right when they they were kind of switching offices in order to be having to do these lie detector tests over and over and over again after multiple days. And I thought that was probably maybe the strongest piece of evidence the government had in relation to those. So it was really surprising that that decision came down. But it doesn't mean, again, to your point, Jesse, that they're abandoning everything. It doesn't mean that charges are dropped. I think a lot of people are kind of miscommunicating that they think that, oh, Diddy's about to walk free today. It's none of that. And so it was a pretty surprising decision by the government. Maybe they were persuaded a little bit by Alexandra Shapiro's argument yesterday when they were moving for that motion for the judgment of acquittal. But in the end of the day, we'll kind of get more.
So that might have been the prosecution's motivation to shift in regards to what they would want included in the jury instructions, which makes sense. They want to secure. Maybe in their minds, it kind of triggers like, maybe we need to change this or maybe let go some of these elements here.
Once the charge conference begins, I was a little disappointed it started. It's now starting at 2 p.m. today. I was hoping it would start at noon. But it's great because now I get to see all of you guys, hang out with you guys for a little bit. But yeah, we should get more clarity, hopefully at 2 o'clock when court starts today.
And let me say, you weren't able to come on the show yesterday because of the scheduling. You had like 5 minutes to get back into court. We have a lot of great responses for you, Elizabeth. And by the way, if anybody has comments or questions for Elizabeth, she's in that courtroom every day. Shoot them over. We'll make sure to answer them. Real quick, I have an expert panel. But I have with me right now litigator Rich Schoenstein. If I could
bring, this is another attorney weighing in on his review of the prosecution's motion.
Real quick, yeah, I got him. Rich, good to see you. Am I right? They're not abandoning arson and kidnapping. And
I believe you're right, and this is why I'm looking at the draft verdict sheet that that your great producer has printed out for me, and it says basically the first question is, do you find defendant Sean Combs guilty of racketeering? And then it asks a question about whether every single predicate theory has been proven or not proven. So it goes over kidnapping under California law, kidnapping under New York law, arson under California law, bribery under California law, and so on. As I read this, the prosecution is only conceding attempted kidnapping under California law, and attempted kidnapping under New York law, and attempted arson under California law. And probably the reason they're doing that is so they don't have to get into what is attempted and not attempted in the jury instructions and in closing arguments. They're just streamlining the case. But it's still very much.
So when they do their closing arguments, this will also be based on what's in the jury instructions. So they're not going to go over everything that they were trying to incorporate in this case earlier. When they do their closing arguments, they're going to focus on what is in the jury instructions and what they need to emphasize when speaking to the jury over the next couple of days.
Kidnapping and arson and all of those other crimes.
So I go back to Elizabeth. I mean, we have questions coming in. Erica Charlotte says, and we've been talking about this, does the streamlining mean the arson and kidnapping are no longer being charged? We're saying the complete opposite. It still seems to be part of the case. But they ask, are we to disregard Kid Cudi's and Capricorn Clark's testimonies?
It doesn't seem like we should disregard that at all, because there are still so many kind of layers to that. And sure, yes, in terms of the attempted arson and, you know, the defense really kind of pointing out that there was female DNA that was found on the Molotov cocktail, something that we really wanted to make sure the jury understood that, especially when it also came to the whole fingerprint debacle and just the insinuation that fingerprints might have been destroyed on behalf of allegedly, you know, Sean Combs possibly having something to do with that, which we don't know that to be the case at all. It was something that was, objected to by the defense, and it was something that also is going to be struck from the record. So when the jury goes back to deliberate about all this stuff, all these witnesses and all their testimony, they're not going to see that portion of the record or anything like that. But in terms of just disregarding Capricorn Clark's testimony, there's still so many layers to that in terms of possibly forced labor, possibly just her experience working with Sean Combs and just what she had all witnessed with Cassie, and also how Capricorn Clark's testimony may help verify Cassie's claims, all those types of things. And in regards to Kid Cudi, I don't think we should disregard his testimony either, especially when it comes to, you know, allegations of the threats that maybe he had heard from Cassie in terms of just sexually explicit videos being released, all of that sort. So I don't think we should rush to judgment as far as dismissing their very important testimony altogether. I think, you know, when people see a letter that says, oh, the prosecution's dropping this, I think they were like, oh my God, that means it's over. Right. That means it's a sure win for the defense. But, you know, there's still so many layers to this. it.
And yesterday we did talk about Rule 29. If you missed yesterday, yesterday was an education for all of us in regards to what Rule 29 is. But remember, this was mentioned in my conversation, my last conversation with attorney Kirsten Brown. She says, well, this will be the process. Diddy has to confirm that he has decided of his own free will not to testify. And then the defense will ask the judge, based off of what the prosecution has presented, they have not proven their case. We're asking you to acquit Diddy without the jury even deliberating on this.
To it, that I think that we should hold off on rushing to judgment just yet until we really know during this charge conference today.
And we're going to talk more about that. Elizabeth, while I have you, what can we expect from this charge conference today? I mean, again, I'm looking at this letter, the government's response to proposed jury instructions. It's really interesting because they talk about what the instructions should be for sex trafficking and forced labor. They talk about, for example, earlier consent from a victim does not mean, is not determinative of whether or not a victim was sex trafficked. They talk about how payment is not determinative, that the court instruct the jury that sex trafficking, labor, and payment to the victim for that conduct are not mutually exclusive. They talk about cumulative conduct. What are you expecting today regarding this charge conference? Because I will say, I think it's quite important in any case, but quite important in this kind of case.
I definitely think today is an important day because we'll really kind of see how they're going to map out the instructions.
It's going to be a critical day. Again, what we've learned in this case is how important jury selection was and how these jury instructions will be. This will probably be where Diddy will be a free man or semi-free man in regards to some of these charges being dropped versus, well, no, he's going to be under the jail.
Given to the jury once they eventually deliberate, and it's very important. This is a pretty complicated case. So I think the government putting in their proposed instructions in terms of, you know, just because maybe an alleged victim had agreed initially to doing the hotel nights or the freak-offs, that just because they initially may have agreed to do it doesn't mean towards the end that they still weren't apprehensive. They still wanted to say no. They still conveyed that they said no. And I think that's where they have to really kind of lay out very clearly, especially possibly in layman's terms, just how murky the waters can get in terms of whether or not that maybe perspective or maybe the jurors are talking or maybe the jurors are thinking that possibly because, you know.
Sidebar, God bless Elizabeth, because we have to keep in mind she's outside of the courthouse reporting back. And it is 100 degrees here in New York City. It's been 100 degrees the last couple of days. It is hot outside. I don't care if they have a fan out there. It is hot. And she's there. Shout out to all the journalists and the content creators that are doing this every single day. Please make sure you guys are staying hydrated. And even when you think that you are hydrated, hydrate a little bit more. And when I say hydrated, it doesn't mean just drinking water. It means drinking water with electrolytes.
Jane and Cassie were in relationships with the defendant, that maybe that kind of muddies the water in terms of can somebody who was in a relationship with the defendant be a victim of sex trafficking? I think
right.
The government has to really kind of lay that out in their proposed instructions. I think in terms of the defense also, I think they're going to want to make sure that the jury also knows like very clearly what each predicate act under RICO is. It seems like from the most part, from my understanding of being inside the courtroom, I think they might be a little more concerned with count one, especially just all the, you know, underlying things that go with count one, again, that being racketeering conspiracy and just kind of, again, laying it out very simply for the jury. Because even sometimes when I'm in the courtroom, I'm kind of like, okay, what did I just hear? What is this interpreting? And I'm just, you know, I'm not.
And we have to keep in mind the journalists that are in there aren't a lawyer, not all of them for the most part, are not lawyers. So they also are learning and like, well, we need clarification on this. Am I hearing this right? Or did I miss something? Very much like what Kirsten said. There's a lot of stuff that we might hear and be like, and think nothing of it. But for an attorney, like, oh no, that was an important detail. And this might affect them during jury deliberations. This might affect them when it comes to appeals. We learned that a lot. We've learned a lot when it comes to some of the things that the defense has been doing as in triggering a mistrial. A lot of that wasn't to really have a mistrial. It was for things in the future when it comes to appeal.
or anything like that. So, you know, imagine me being on a jury. I would want things just really spelled out very clearly. So I think both sides are going to take their time making sure that they get everything that they want in on these proposed jury instructions. But I also think an interesting thing, Jesse, is I'm kind of interested to see if the prosecutors and the defense attorney who are going to be giving the closing arguments are going to be inside the courtroom today for this charge conference. Because yesterday, the judge said that, you know, he is okay with the whichever lawyer is going to be giving the closing argument not to attend the charge conference, and the other lawyers can kind of argue everything out. But I'll be interested to see if possibly, you know, Maureen Comey will be in there, and right. Mark Agnifilo will be in there, who I presume is going
to
be giving the
sidebar in regards to, because I've been watching a bunch of different people. I think it was Rotten Mangoes that reported. I didn't get to watch the full video because it was like 2 hours, but I did see just some of her perspective on some of the attorneys and their reactions. And they, and one of the things that she mentioned was that Maureen Comey, she seems so unfazed. She seems so, and you know, Maureen Comey is the daughter of, he was the head of the FBI. He also was in, I believe part of the SDNY, because I remember, sidebar, you remember the Martha Stewart documentary that came out on Netflix that Martha Stewart said she didn't love, but she was a part of it. Maureen Comey's father, Maureen, I'm not going to hold your father and what he's done allegedly to put Martha Stewart and trying to make Martha Stewart an example. That's a whole, go watch the documentary, because then it ties it all together. You're like, oh, so he wasn't just the FBI director. No, no, no. Before then, he was one of the top guys over there at the SDNY. I believe it was the SDNY. He was definitely a major prosecutor.
Closing arguments in this trial, but we'll see if they'll show up now that court has been pushed back a couple of hours today to begin at 2.
Right, because they need to prepare. They need.
So it makes sense that certain attorneys will not be in attendance today in regards to the charging conference because they're prepping for closing arguments. The closing arguments are critical. You remember what Kirsten said, if you saw the video that we did, she says the closing argument is where you can win this case.
For closing arguments, which are quite important and quite lengthy in this mm-hmm. case. Before I let you go, Elizabeth, what's the vibe like we've seen in this past week? What was the vibe of Diddy? What's the vibe of the jury? What can you tell us? How do they look? How do they, you know?
And this is important because we're not in there. There are no cameras. There's no audio. There are just people in there. And again, this is going to be her perception. Going back to Rotten Mango and their report, they were talking about the Diddy boys. We need to get away from that. They're men. They're damn near 30 men that were in the court. And some of this, the conversation on their energy being in there, and some people took it as them being arrogant, a lot of smiling, a lot of, you know, doodling on their paper and passing notes and things like that. And people feel like they're not being serious enough, but their father and their attorneys may have told them, you need to be lighthearted, light energy. Don't let them see. I don't know what they're being told, but some people are being critical of how Diddy's sons have conducted themselves in court. Not necessarily inappropriate, but sort of lighthearted. Maybe they expect them to be a little bit more stoic in their expressions. They haven't been. I've seen the footage of them coming out of court. They seem to be okay, you know, smiling and things like that. So I don't know what they've been told by Diddy or the legal people that are behind. And also keep in mind, Diddy probably has a lot of publicists and damage control experts that are handling this from the public view as well.
Demeanor like as we're coming to the conclusion of this case.
Yeah, well, as far as the jury is concerned, I kind of feel like maybe they were kind of tired of possibly reading all those text messages, watching all those sexually explicit videos, because that is what it felt like for most of the duration of this week, even going back to late last week. And so, you know, I think maybe for the jurors, they're probably a little at the tired point of this trial. It's been
sidebar, I believe, like, did one of Diddy's friends, going back to the video that I watched from Rotten Mango, they said, and I've seen him quite a few times, I'm guessing this is one of Diddy's friends. He's been wearing like the Puff and the Free Diddy merch, even though you're not supposed to wear that in court, I believe. And I believe one of the sons actually wore a Free Diddy shirt under another shirt that he had, but you could see it said Free Diddy. This particular friend of the family apparently had fallen asleep in court. Again, it's a long day, so I probably would have fallen asleep too, just saying.
almost 2 months at this point. And so I think they're kind of like, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Eventually we'll get this case. Eventually we'll deliberate. But again, I'm just guessing. I'm not inside their heads or anything like that. But as far as Sean Combs is concerned, I will say this. I think that in terms of just his defense attorneys and their arguments, and I think that he seems pretty proud of what the defense put up, even though we weren't expecting a very long case from the defense's case in chief. Really, it was just them reading stuff into...
This would be a question I would ask maybe Kirsten or another attorney. This had to be the shortest defense that we've ever seen. I mean, literally, it wasn't even a full day. It wasn't even like a full half a day. They rested their case. They called no witnesses. Diddy had decided, which for the most part, defendants usually do not testify, especially in Fed cases. I found it to be very interesting how quickly the defense presented their case. But if you've been following this case along with us, we have a whole playlist. Be sure to check out the playlist. If you follow the case with us, then you know the defense has been pretty good about poking holes into the prosecution's case.
Reading exhibits and reading a bunch of stipulations. But it seems like from what I could tell of just his demeanor and vibe inside the courtroom, he seemed pretty pleased with what his defense gave, especially during those cross-examinations of the many witnesses, including right. Don Richard, including of Mia, including of Jane, including of all the special agents, just all the various witnesses that took the stand on behalf of the government. And even in terms of just the assistants and their testimony. So I think as far as just the end of the trial, we're getting to the beginning of the end here. I think, you know, we'll see kind of what happens with closing arguments tomorrow. But it seems like, you know, possibly maybe Sean Combs is feeling pretty good right now. He said the judge was doing a good job, an excellent job, he added yesterday. Yeah, and it actually got a chuckle from the judge, too. And so I think as far as the vibe goes yesterday, you know, he seems pretty upbeat, given that, you know, on the tail end of this, it's possibly that, you know, the jury will come with a decision. And I can only imagine the weight and how that might possibly feel on a defendant, especially as high profile as Sean Combs.
You mentioned concern. We put up a poll. Are you concerned about the charges dropped last minute influencing the jury's perception? 46% say very concerned. 34% say not at all. 19%.
Here's the thing. I think with that initial news of them streamlining this case and the misinformation that charges had been dropped and that Diddy was going free, had people very concerned. They were like, oh. And when you don't understand what you're hearing, especially, again, part of the reason why day 30 of our recap is not going to really be about what's playing out in the charging conference, because that is really, I think, something so complicated that I don't think I could or should do on my own. Again, if we have time, I will hopefully be able to grab Kirsten from her case and hopefully unpack what happened in court today. Closing arguments will be happening tomorrow, but we're not done. We're not done quite yet. I'm just going to remind you guys, don't forget to like the video. It's an easy and free way of supporting not just my channel, but other channels as well. And if you're listening to the audio version of this, because you can, on the Kempire podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And sharing is caring. Don't forget to share our podcast and our YouTube channel with other people. Help us get to 600,000 subscribers here on YouTube. And also follow us on TikTok, The Kempire on TikTok, and Instagram, The Kempire as well, because I am creating some short content in regards to this case and other things. And don't forget, for Pride Month, we are in our last days of Pride Month, but we are still raising money for the center. With everything happening in our government, there are a lot of organizations that are being cut when it comes to their federal funding. So help us keep the doors of the center open. Not only do they help LGBT community, they help the community in general. 100% of your donation goes to the organization. Thank you to everyone that's already donated or shared our page for other people to donate. Keep doing that. My true goal is to get to $5,000 before the end of the month. So thank you to everyone that, again, has donated, shared the donation. We appreciate you guys. All right, let's move on to the letter that was sent, because this is what caused the big stir this morning in regards to the 8-page letter that the government sent to the court. So they said, "Dear Judge Subramanian, the government respectfully writes regarding its requested edits to the court's proposed jury instructions. The government understands that the court's desire for streamlined instructions." So they're putting it in the court. They're saying, like, we understand you want it to be streamlined, so we're trying to make it streamlined. They said, with that in mind, the government has suggested ways to streamline those instructions. Specifically, the government has removed instructions from the charge relating to attempted kidnapping under both California and New York law, attempted arson under California law, and aiding and abetting S trafficking. The government is no longer planning to proceed on these theories of liability, so instructions are no longer necessary. The government has also attempted to simplify the language relating to the count one, a proposal as explained in the government's comment bubbles, that the government hopes not only serves the purposes of streamlining the instructions, but also will avoid any confusion as to the operative agreement for count one. One, S trafficking and forced labor instructions. While the government has taken seriously the court's desire for brevity, the government still strongly believes that certain limited additional instructions on S trafficking and forced labor instructions, which are regularly given in S trafficking and forced labor trials in this circuit, are necessary for the jury to adequately understand the law on these charges. Each of these instructions reflect established case law and are directly relevant to key issues in the case. Moreover, without such instructions, the government has serious concerns that the jury may misunderstand the applicable law for both charges, which are extremely complex legal concepts about which jurors may have
When you need to do more with less, Upwork helps you hire fast without the overhead. Find expert freelancers in design, marketing, IT, AI, and more. Never tried Upwork? Now's the perfect time. Spend your first $1,000 and get $200 in credit for your next project. No upfront costs. No long-term commitments. Just $200 to reinvest in what matters. Go to Upwork.com/save to get started. That's UPWORK.com/SAVE. Upwork.com/save.
Conceived or mistaken notions. So this is what they're asking the judge, and this is what they're talking about today in day 30 of the Diddy trial. So they have citations here included. Then they say the government has listed the precedent for each of these instructions in its comments to the forced labor and S trafficking sections of the requests to charge. To avoid repeating that law and precedent here, the government limits the below largely to providing the government's reasons why, based on the particular facts and issues in this trial, these additional instructions are necessary. So under S trafficking and forced labor, they put requested instruction, earlier consent not determinative. Due to the particular facts of this case, the government believes that it's imperative that the court inform the jury that prior consensual sex activity is not determinative of whether a victim was S trafficked. So that's important to know what they're saying here. Because we're talking about people like Cassie Ventura, and when we talk about Jane, they said, as this court is well aware, the facts of this case involve instances of trafficking of Jane and Ms. Ventura that follow instances of consensual sexual activity, a topic that is likely to be discussed extensively by both parties during closing arguments. And it is Second Circuit law that earlier periods of consensual activity do not preclude a finding of trafficking as to later activity involving a victim. Here's my layman interpretation. I'm not saying that's what they're saying here, but it's something that we've said before. Just because you have had consensual sex with someone doesn't mean that there hasn't been a time where one person did not consent and you still forced them to do it. So that's my interpretation of that. I'm not saying that's what they're saying, but that's my interpretation. Lawyers, feel free to chime in below. Then they cite different cases in regards to that. I'm just going to skip over that. They said the same is true for forced labor. The government's forced labor theory focuses on four victims, Cassie and Jane, with regards to their participation in freak-offs or hotel nights, and Mia and Capricorn Clark. Capricorn Clark with regard to their employment for the defendant. Similarly, to S trafficking, Cassie and Jane's prior consensual sexual activities do not preclude a finding that later non-consensual sexual acts are forced labor. Then they have their citations here. Okay, I'm going to skip through this. To avoid any confusion on these points and to ensure that the jury applies the correct law to the facts of this case, the government respectfully requests that the court include such an instruction. Requested instruction two. payment not determinative. So this is interesting. Let's see what they say here. The government respectfully requests that the court instruct the jury that sex trafficking slash labor and payment to the victim for that conduct are not mutually exclusive. For sex trafficking, this instruction is crucial because of the fact pattern underlying Jane's trafficking by the defendant. As Jane testified around April 2023, the defendant and Jane entered into a multi-year love, in quotes, love contract, under which the defendant agreed to pay Jane's rent in the amount of $10,000 each month. While the contract was in effect and in part as a result of terms of that contract, the government alleges that Jane was trafficked because jurors may be under the mistaken impression that someone cannot be coerced if they receive compensation in return. So they have to, they're trying to really give us an understanding that despite them receiving a lavish lifestyle, money from him, doesn't mean that laws weren't broken here. Because jurors may be under the mistaken impression that someone cannot be coerced if they receive compensation in return, the government requests that the jury be instructed as to the law that payment alone does not preclude a finding of guilt as to sex trafficking. They said because the forced labor victims also received money or gifts from the defendant, it is important to instruct the jury that payment does not preclude a finding of forced labor in order to prevent confusion. As noted above, the defendant paid Jane $10,000 per month rent and similarly paid for Cassie's rent and other expenses. In addition, as employees, Mia and Capricorn Clark were paid salaries by the defendant's company. The jury may not intuitively understand that this payment does not preclude a guilty finding on forced labor. So they're trying to make sure that the jury understands that if there's any level of confusion here, please, in regards to the jury instructions, we need to let them know that this can still be against the law despite the position that they played in this person's life or company. This is why these are so important, and this is why they're going to be fighting in day 30 in court in regards to what will be included. Requested instruction number 3, cumulative conduct. The government's proposed additional charge language instructing that the defendant that they may consider a defendant's cumulative conduct is particularly necessary in this case for the jury to understand what it can consider in assessing whether Ms. Ventura was coerced. Throughout the trial, the government has introduced evidence not only of threats and harms directed at Ms. Ventura over a multi-year period, but the defendant, but also the defendant's threats and abuse of others, which Ms. Ventura was aware. Under the law, the jury may consider all of this conduct in assessing whether a victim was coerced, and then they cite the different laws that, not just the laws, but cases that would be an example. Then they go on to say, however, without such an instruction, jurors may mistakenly believe that they are confined to consider a narrower category of evidence in deciding whether the elements of sex trafficking are met. And this is where, I've sent this to Kirsten to review as well, because I want to hear a lawyer's perspective in regards to this. Because again, I think we might be shocked as to, well, this is exactly why they're asking this and doing this or excluding certain things. So the cumulative conduct is for enforced labor instruction is also important for Mia and Capricorn. Both worked for the defendant over long periods of time, and during their employment, the defendant was violent and threatened them. The cumulative effect of the violence and threats can all be considered by the jury in assessing whether they were forced to engage in labor or services for the defendant. Because remember that the defense has said these were consensual. A lot of these people stayed working for Diddy because they were paid and because they were had access to a major lifestyle and a major artist and his influence. So this is part of what I'm interpreting. Again, I just want to say this is my interpretation. This is not fact. What's fact is what they're putting in the document. And this is my interpretation of the document. So requested instruction 4, physical restraint. Based on the cross-examination of Jane and Mia, the government respectfully requests that the court briefly instruct the jury that physical restraint is not required to establish sex trafficking and forced labor. As this court is aware, one of the key instances of trafficking of Jane that the government intends to discuss at length in its closing, So they're already letting us know what will be said in their closing, and which the government anticipates that the defense will also address in closing, involves that the defendant's assault and subsequent freak-off involving Jane in June of 2024. During cross-examination about this incident, defense counsel extensively questioned Jane about times that she could have escaped on the state. And then they cite the different, what was said, asking Jane, so they asked that. So they said, asking Jane, does the back gate have capability for you to leave the house? Asking whether she has other family members in Los Angeles, saying that, again, she could have left, did he? Moreover, during today's Rule 29 motion from yesterday, defense counsel again argued that Jane could have not been trafficked on this date because she could have left. Because of the defense lengthy cross-examination on this point and expected arguments at closing and to avoid confusion, the government requests that a very brief instruction be added on this point that makes a clear legal import of this evidence. As I said before, part of why you're seeing them try to pull back on some of what they were charging, again, no charges were dropped, but pulling back on some of these elements to streamline these jury instructions, as you can see, it's a response to some of the key points that were brought up yesterday in the Rule 29. Again, for those that might be new here and you want to understand what Rule 29 is, you can see the extended conversation from yesterday's recap. However, just a quick synopsis of what that is. Basically, that was the defense asking the judge to acquit Diddy on all these charges, claiming that the prosecution has not proven their case. And these are the reasons. So they're citing this in their jury instructions here, or proposed jury instructions. Again, this is not fact. This is what they're proposing. We'll know after today what was included and what was not included. They said that in regards to Rule 29, in regards to S trafficking, requested instruction for 5, defendant need not receive thing of value. So they explained this to be the government respectfully requests that the court add a single sentence to its charge on S trafficking to clarify the defendant need not to be the person who receives the thing of value from the sex act. The government believes that this short instruction is necessary here due to the particular relationship between the parties and the potential that jurors will be influenced by preconceived misconceptions about trafficking that do not comport with the law as it will be explained to them. And then they have a different citation in regards to a case. And they say Congress noted that trafficking in person is not limited to the sex industry. A short instruction on this point is needed to clarify the proper scope of this statute. This is hard work. I have to give it to either side in regards to this, and especially because this case is so different that they have to make sure that they're covering all of their bases here. This is really, really interesting. And again, hence why they are dropping those different elements to streamline this case. And I know there will be some folks that will say, oh no, their case is weak, this is why they're doing it. No, they want to make sure that they win. And by winning, because they brought up in the Rule 29 that those particular elements were unconstitutional, they're like, well, you know what? Let's take those out because we can get them on this and this. Based on my interpretation, I'm saying my non-legal interpretation, even though Kirsten refers to me as Kempire Esquire. Like, well, no, she does, but I know that I'm not. All right, moving on. Requested instruction number 6, commercial sex act, need not occur. They said the government respectfully requests that the court add a very short instruction reflecting the black letter law proposition that a completed commercial sex act is not required for a sex trafficking conviction. Without such a charge, a jury may incorrectly think that a commercial sex act must occur for S trafficking conviction. The phrase would be used to cause from the statute is not readily understandable for non-lawyers and may be misunderstood by the jurors as requiring that a commercial sex act result. Second, this law is relevant to the facts of this case. For example, as your honor is aware, one of the specific instances of alleged S trafficking, which the government has focused on during its case, is the incident at the Intercontinental Hotel. The government has presented evidence that the defendant kicked and then dragged Ms. Ventura in the direction of a hotel room where an S worker was standing by and a freak off had been in progress. A juror could reasonably find that even though a commercial sex act did not occur immediately after the defendant attempted to drag Ms. Ventura back to the room, the elements of this count were otherwise met at the time. Very specific. Requested instruction number 7, reckless disregard. The government respectfully requests a more detailed reckless disregard instruction. The government anticipates that one of the key disputes as to counts 2 and 4 will be whether the defendant has the requisite knowledge that Jane and Ms. Ventura felt forced into engaging in these commercial sex acts. While knowledge, in quotes they put knowledge, a term people use their everyday in the term people use in their everyday lives is likely to be readily understandable to the jury, the government believes that additional explanation is needed to explain the term reckless disregard to the jury. A concept which non-lawyers are unlikely to have ever encountered. That's interesting. I mean, I get it. They want to make sure that the jury, who are laymen, they're not attorneys, will have an understanding what they mean by reckless disregard. So, 2, in regards to conspiracy instruction. They said the government's proposal also requests certain additional language outlining the law on conspiracy. The current definition is only a few sentences long, and the government's concerned that it may leave open too many unanswered questions for jurors, which will result in a number of jury notes seeking clarification. It is imperative that the jury understand the law of conspiracy. This is where I would need more clarification, because when they talked about a conspiracy in the charges, I was like, what makes a conspiracy? That would be a good question for Kirsten. A legal concept that is not intuitive. In order for them to correctly apply that law to the facts relevant to count one as well as the narcotics conspiracy predicate, the government has carefully gone through conspiracy instructions that are regularly given in this circuit and has only proposed adding that language that is directly relevant to issues in this case. The government is available at the conference to answer any questions to the court has about why such instructions are necessary for the jury's understanding in this case. When they talk about the charging conference that's happening today. All right. So number 3, they put effect on interstate or foreign commerce. The government respectfully requests that the court add a short instruction in its discussion of the interstate commerce element of the racketeering conspiracy that narcotics activity has an effect on interstate commerce as a matter of law. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Buckle up, y'all. We're getting a first-class seat into law, okay? Indeed, the Second Circuit has found that narcotics activity satisfies the interstate commerce requirement for a racketeering enterprise. And then they give you the case to see. There's a C, United States versus Miller. Of course, special importance to the present case, we have held that because narcotics trafficking represents a type of activity that Congress reasonably found substantially affected interstate commerce, the actual effect that each drug conspiracy has on interstate commerce is constitutionally irrelevant. It follows that whereas here, the RICO Enterprises business is narcotics trafficking, that enterprise must be viewed as substantially affecting interstate commerce, even if individual predicate acts occur solely within a state. Do you see why I feel bad for this jury? This is a very complicated case. These instructions are very important, but it's going to be a lot for them to take in and understand. I wouldn't be surprised if they have questions so that they have a better understanding. Again, this is a reminder why it was important to get rid of juror number 6. You can't tell us where you live and you can't be clear on that answer. You're not going to be clear on an answer when it comes to this. And that's no offense to juror number 6, but I have concerns that you will not be able to answer this clearly. But juror number 6, for those that might just be jumping into this case, is gone. He's been replaced. All right. So they said further in Taylor versus United States, they said the Supreme Court found that the interstate commerce element of Hobbs Act robbery is satisfied if the government establishes that the defendant robbed or attempted to rob a drug dealer of drugs or drug proceeds, since, as a matter of law, the market for illegal drugs in the commerce over which the United States has jurisdiction. I think this is going to be above our heads in understanding, guys. I am going to skip through this because they cite multiple different cases in it. And I already know some of you are going to be like, I don't understand that. So this will be another question for Kirsten. Kirsten will be back. Kirsten will be back at least two more times, probably before the verdict. I don't know at this particular point. I'm going to see what her schedule is looking like, because I know you have questions. And if you're a member of the channel, you'll have exclusive access to asking her questions. I will do a post once I've confirmed when Kirsten will be back. So for that reason, courts in this district have also consistently instructed the jury that narcotics activity satisfies the commerce element under RICO. Okay, and then they cite more. Congress has determined that all narcotics activity, even purely local narcotics activity, has an effect on interstate commerce. Thus, if you find that in the course of the racketeering activities, members of the enterprise trafficked in narcotics, this element is satisfied. That is an important thing to note. That's important. Let me read that again, because they're being very clear. And again, we don't know whether or not, because we don't know the actual final jury instructions. This is what they're battling out in court today. Hence why they probably had to start late, because both sides were probably trying to figure out, well, no, we need this added, we need this added, that kind of thing. Let me read this again. They said, okay, in addition, Congress has determined that all narcotics activity, even purely local narcotics activity, has an effect on interstate commerce. Thus, if you find that in the course of the racketeering activities, members of the enterprise trafficked in narcotics, this element is satisfied. And then they cite case law for that. Interstate commerce includes the movement of goods, services, money, and individuals between states. Congress has determined that all narcotics activities, even purely local narcotics activities, has a substantial effect on the interstate commerce. Thus, if you find that in the course of the racketeering activities, members of the enterprise trafficked in narcotics, you may find this element satisfied. It is not necessary for you to find that a particular defendant knew the enterprise was engaged in interstate commerce. That's important to note. We're going to feel like we're a part of the jury, and I feel for the jury. So number four, venue. So they say this in regards to, for those that are just joining us, we're talking about these are proposals from the prosecution when it comes to the jury instructions. Literally, they're ironing out those jury instructions today. I do not know whether or not if they have finalized them at this particular time of the video, but I will take a look. Let me just take a look. No, they're still in court. They are still in court. And this is almost 6 o'clock, guys, that I'm recording this. And they are still in court trying to iron out these details. But they would like to start closing arguments tomorrow. All right. Let me see. Venue. The government respectfully requests that the court modify the instruction currently included in the discussion of venue that ministerial functions and preparatory acts occurring in the district are insufficient to establish venue. The circuit has held that the venue may be satisfied for S trafficking where a defendant contacts a victim who is located in the district for purposes of enticing them to engage in S trafficking. They said finding venue satisfied where a minor testified that Benjamin first contacted her using Facebook Messenger in the fall of 2015 when she was living in a residential treatment center located in the Southern District of New York for purposes of enticing the minor to engage in S work. So they're citing this case in regards to that. They said since this particular case, not the Diddy case, they said since the conduct in Walsh may erroneously be construed by a juror as merely preparatory, the government requests that the court modify this portion of the venue instruction, okay, to reflect the language in this particular case they cite by clarifying that acts that are preparatory to the offense and not part of the offense are insufficient to establish venue. Okay. Whether the crime be continuing or non-continuing, venue is not proper in a district in which the only acts performed by the defendant were preparatory to the defense and not part of the offense. Emphasis added, they put in parentheses. However, the inclusion of the term ministerial functions may further confuse the jury and in any event does not appear to be relevant to the conduct in the case, nor is the government aware of the circuit precedent for that portion of the instruction. Accordingly, the government requests that the reference to the ministerial functions be omitted. That's where I would have more questions. I know some of you are probably like, I don't know if I understand that. Me either. But again, that would be a great question to ask Kirsten. All right. So this word, unanimity. Let me look at what that word means, because I need to know. I just can't just take these words as, you know, we're going to do this together. We're all learning together. And again, a lot of the words that we know every day in legal terms don't mean the same thing necessarily. All right. So according to Google, it says in legal terms, unanimity, I think is how you pronounce it, means the complete agreement of all members of the group on a particular decision or verdict. This is most often discussed in the context of jury trials, where a unanimous verdict means all jurors agree on the guilt or innocence of the defendant. Okay. And then they go into it more. They said in many jurisdictions, including federal counts and most state courts, criminal trials require a unanimous jury verdict for a conviction, which is what we know needs to happen here. This means every single juror must agree that the defendant is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. If the jury cannot reach a unanimous decision, it is considered a hung jury, and the judge may declare a mistrial or order the jury to continue deliberating. We talked about this again. I'm always referencing back. This is not just a shameless plug to my conversation with Kirsten. It was very informative because we've talked about that in part one and in part two. So be sure to check out that. I will include it in the description of this video and audio if you're listening to this. Let me go back to unanimity. Well, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Unanimous. This is what they're referencing. So under five, they say the government objects to the unanimity instructions for the S trafficking and Mann Act offenses. The government has been unable to find a single first S trafficking and Mann Act case where a unanimity instruction was given and are concerned that the language as drafted will introduce error into the charge. Accordingly, the government proposes the following language, which is designed to reduce the risk of error and confusion. The intent in these edits, among other things, is to properly characterize what constitutes the relevant instance and to make clear that unanimity is only needed for elements, not means. And then they cite case law. They said affirming an instruction to the jury that to convict, it did not need to conclude unanimously as to how Corley violated blah, blah, blah. These are previous cases. Specifically, whether he either harbored or participated in a venture that harbored minor victims. This is, again, in reference to this other case. Because harboring and participating in ventures to harbor or are alternative means of committing the offense. And then they cite more case law. They said acts in which a person may engage to commit the offense of S trafficking of a minor, in particular recruits, entices, harbors, transports, provides, obtains, advertises, maintains, or patronizes or solicits by any means are means and not elements. Then they said count 2 and 4 propose instruction. And this is the last part for those. I know this is now running long, which is okay. And again, we didn't even get to what really played out in court. Right now, we're just talking about the proposed instructions from the prosecution. The same happens from the defense. They have their proposed instructions as well. Okay, so counts 2 and 4 proposed instruction. They said the government has argued that the defendant committed S trafficking with respect to Cassandra Ventura. For count two or Jane, for count 4 over a years-long period. To find the defendant guilty of these counts, you must be unanimous that the government proved beyond a reasonable doubt all the elements of the charge with respect to at least one specific instance of S trafficking within that period. As to that specific instance of S trafficking, you must agree that all the elements were met beyond a reasonable doubt, but you need not agree as to the way in which the elements are satisfied or all the details of the instance. And this is why they're trying to streamline this, because let me tell you something, because just reading some of this, I was thinking to myself, what is going to make a juror not just like, I really don't understand this, I'm just going to say guilty, or I'm just going to say not guilty. But if you streamline and you make it easy for the jury to understand what they're doing and what the instructions are, they're more inclined to make a well thought out decision. So counts 3 and 5 proposed instruction. They said the government has argued that the defendant violated federal laws regarding the transportation to engage in prostitution with respect to Cassandra Ventura, among others, for count 3, and respect to Jane, among others, for count 5, over a year's long period. To find the defendant guilty on these counts, you must be unanimous that the government proved beyond a reasonable doubt all the elements of the charge with respect to at least one specific instance of transportation to engage in prostitution with that within that period. And a lot of legal experts have said if they don't get him on the other charges, they feel a lot of people seem to be in agreement, they probably will get him on the whole transportation of S workers charge. They said, as to that specific instance of transportation to engage in prostitution, you must agree that all the elements were met beyond a reasonable doubt, but you need to not agree as to the way in which the elements were satisfied or all the details of the instance. This is where it gets a little like, you're like, wait, what? To the extent that the court has questions about certain of these proposed edits, the government is available to answer these questions at tomorrow's charging conference. I added that part in regards to the charging conference element. And this was from the U.S. Attorney Jay Clayton. And of course, all the other people that were, I don't even think we saw some of these people ask questions. We saw Maureen Comey, Meredith Foster, Emily Johnson, Christy Slavik, Madison Reddick Smizer, Mitzi Steiner, all assistant attorneys. So Jay Clayton is the head. Remember, Damian Williams was originally over this case. He was the one who brought the indictments, but he stepped down. That's normal when you have a change in administrations within our federal government. So that is what happened in regards to why Damian Williams is no longer here. Damian Williams is probably either on vacation or, not on vacation. I think at this point, he stepped down a while ago. So he's probably in the private sector right now. I wonder. Anyway, guys, let me just double check to see Inner City Press to see if we have any updates in regards to if they're still in court, y'all. Literally at 6:07 p.m. Eastern, they are still in court battling out. I'll just tell you one of the things that Inner City Press, who's been covering this case as well, one of their last tweets says the March 10th Enterprise letter said they would provide commercial S acts. This is according to Diddy's attorney. The judge says the government is going to be arguing the commercial sex acts occurred. What do we do here? AUSA says this is blown out of proportion. We're not bound by the Witt clauses. So they're still at 6 p.m. battling this out in court. This is part of the reason why I'm giving you a recap in regards to what they're trying to do. We'll probably have a better understanding on what the final instructions will be. I remember speaking with Kirsten about this. I don't know if we will have the final instructions. These are the proposed instructions from the prosecution that we just read to you. Guys, as always, do me a favor if you haven't already. Be sure to like the video. It's easy, free way of supporting the channel. Subscribe if you enjoy our content and what we talk about here. We don't just talk about Diddy. We talk about everything in pop culture. We even recap some of your favorite reality shows as well. Earlier today, we recapped the Real Housewives of Atlanta season 16 reunion looks. So be sure to check that out if you missed it. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast because we've been giving you your Diddy updates there. And on our YouTube page, there is a Diddy trial playlist. We've covered Diddy and these lawsuits and stories over the years. However, the Diddy trial updates are under their own playlist. So be sure to check that out as well. And don't forget, the Kempire After Dark, the villain era, is coming to Philadelphia July 10th. That literally is two weeks. In 2 weeks, we'll be in Philadelphia. There is a summer flash sale happening right now. Go get your tickets. If you've been waiting to get tickets, this would be the week to get your tickets. So Philly, go get your tickets. And if you know someone in Philly, you know that they enjoy the content and they may not know about the show, be sure to let them know. Help spread the word. Because I tell you, I run into people in the street, they're like, I didn't know you had a show coming up, or I missed your show. I didn't know it was in town. Be sure to spread the word. I appreciate it. Shout out to those of you in Atlanta. I'm coming to Atlanta August 5th. Then I'll be in DC August 22nd. Then back here in New York City on September 12th. All shows have meet and greet tickets available as well. Go get those tickets. The New York City show has a live stream option. So get your tickets for that, because you'll have that for a week. Even if you're coming to the Atlanta, Philly, or DC show, what I say in those cities won't be what I say come September 12th. God only knows. We probably won't be talking about Diddy at that particular point. Who knows? Or maybe we will. We never know. We might have freak-off stories. We had one. We had one in LA. No, we had two in LA. So stay tuned. Or we'll be talking about Tyler Perry. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Guys, as always, again, don't forget to like the video. Don't forget to share the video. For those that are listening, thank you for listening. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Thank you to our Kingsguards. Thank you to our channel members. Thank you to our subscribers. And those of you that just continue to watch the videos, I appreciate it. But subscribe. You're missing out when we go live. You're missing out when we have breaking news. Don't rely on the algorithm. Subscribe today and turn on your notifications and follow us on socials, because a lot of times I will update you there as well. Oh, we're going live, or we're going to be here. I went live on Instagram last night and on TikTok. So make sure you're following us there, The Kempire, on all socials. And of course, here on YouTube, follow us as well. And follow our backup page, Kempire Radio. Be sure to follow us there as well. Thank you all for being here. Thank you so much for watching and, of course, for listening. See you all in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. As always, you can hear Kempire on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. More information can be found on KempireRadio.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.